Praxine, we read about the war in Ai and how they basically failed. You know, they were beaten in the war, and we talked about the reasons why with the sin of Achan. Okay, so now we're in Parashat. And okay, and it starts out with Hashem talking to Yehoshua. It says, "V'yomer Hashem el Yehoshua, al tira ve'al teichat. Don't be scared. Kach imcha et kol am ha'machama, v'kum alei ha'ai, v'go up again against Ai, v'ein atati v'yadecha et melech ha'ai, v'etamo v'etiro v'etarto. I'm going to give Ai into your hands." Okay, so we see that we're now going to have, as the title says, right, this is battle at Ai, take two. This is going to be the second attempt to fight against Ai. He goes on and he says, "V'asita la'ai l'maka kasher asita li'richo l'maka." The same way that you beat Yericho, you're going to beat Ai. "Rak shlala v'hemta tavosu lachem." But this time you're allowed to take the spoils, as opposed to in Yericho when you weren't. "Sim l'cha orev la'ir me'achareha." You're going to put an ambush behind the city. Okay, so we start off with this pep talk from Hashem. First of all, the words that are used, "al tira v'al tichat," are actually the same words that were used in your first source, when Yehoshua first is appointed as the next leader after Moshe. So Moshe says to Yehoshua in Devarim, he says, "Vayikra Moshe liYehoshua vayomer elav l'enei kol Yisrael, chazak v'yamatz." We read this in the very first shir. "Ki ata tevo et ha'am azeh, el ha'aretz asher nishba Hashem le'avotam, latit lehem, v'ata tenchilena otam." Okay, you should be strong, you're going to be the next leader. "V'Hashem hu alich lefanecha, hu yiyemcha, lo yirpacha v'lo yezveka, lo tira v'lo teichat." So it's exactly the same words that are used here as that are used now. And again, just the whole idea of this, these words of encouragement really reminds us of what? When did we have these kind of words of encouragement? In Yehoshua? You were definitely there. Perek Aleph.
Yeah.
Okay, right? Perek Aleph.
Okay.
Right, the whole Perek Aleph is really Hashem giving this chizuk to Yehoshua. And now again, we see it again, these words of encouragement, because now that challenge that we built up in Perek Aleph, we talked about how he's going to have to, it's a very big challenge, he has to go through this transitional period and learn how to, you know, have this hishtadlus, it's a whole new era. Now it's actually going to come into fruition. This is really going to happen. So now his leadership really is beginning. Like this new, I mean, we had the whole transition up to here, but now this leadership within the new era, within the natural world, is really starting here. Right. So now these words of encouragement are coming back again. And Hashem tells him, basically says straight out, "You're going to win." Right? He gets a promise that he's going to win. Yet, the way that he wins, right, it's not like he can just rely on a miracle. Hashem even tells him straight out, he says, as part of his words of encouragement, the last thing is, "Sim lecha orev la'ir me'achareha." Right? How are you going to win? By putting an ambush. Right? It's going to be through a natural means. We're going to have a military strategy here. It's not going to be a miracle. Even though, yes, you're going to win the same way that you won in Yericho, it's going to be completely parallel. I'm going to be with you just as much as I was with you in Yericho. The way that it's going to happen is going to be completely different. And just the Ralbag writes over here, right? Shara'oi l'chol mishtadel ba'asiyat po'el b'shalo'i katzer me'amta'at asibot ha'miyot ha'tachlit asher yechavin. Right? A person who is trying to put in his status, he shouldn't be short in the it's hard to translate this, but basically he has to do all he can. He has to go and do as much as he can to get into the direction he wants to get to. And he also has to do whatever he can to prevent anything that's going to prevent him getting to his goal. So there in Yan Yehoshua, and therefore Yehoshua is going to have all of these strategies, right? So even though he was promised straight out Hashem is going to be with him, the idea, again, as we keep saying over and over again, is that he has to put in his all. He has to do complete ishtalis here. Now we're going to look in detail in the Pesukim exactly what was the plan here. What was this great military strategy that Yehoshua has to come up with? It's hard to say exactly how much is Hashem and how much is Yehoshua. Let's read it and we'll see. Okay, so definitely we just saw that Hashem actually told him You're going to put a, you should put an ambush behind the city. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on, Vayikam Yoshua v'chol am ha-melchama la'lo ta'ai. So they get up to go to Ai, all the men who are of fighting age. Vayikhar Yoshua 30,000 ish, gibore ha-chaya, vayishlachem alayla. And he chooses 30,000 strong men, and he sends them at night. Vayitzav otam limor, ru'u atem orvim la'ir me'achare ha'ir. You're going to make an ambush behind the city. But don't go too far away from the city. You have to be ready. And I and all the rest of the army that's with me is going to come close to the city. When they start to come out against us like they did the first time, we're going to run away from them just as we did in the first war. And they're going to go after us. They're going to think we're running away like we did the first time. We're going to run away. Vatem, now you 30,000 ambushmen are going to Takuma Miha Rave. You're going to get up from your ambush. You're going to take hold of the city. And Hashem is going to give the city into your hand. Vayat kitafsachem atair, tatsitu atair, ba'ish, kidvar Hashem, tasu ru'u tziviti. And then you will set the city on fire, like Hashem said, and I'm commanding you. Okay, so that is basically the strategy, except... Hold on, actually, no, let's keep going a little bit more. I'm sorry. We're in Yud, okay, but in 10. Yishlechem Yoshua. So Yoshua sends them, Ve'yachlu el ha-ma'arav. Okay, so they camp outside the city and they're sleeping there. Yeshua gets up early and he goes with his kingdom through the nation. I'll talk about in a minute what he was doing there. They all go up to the city. All the camp that was with him go towards the city. Okay, and then it says Vaykach Khamishit Alafim Ish. Then he took 5,000 men, Vayisem Otam Orev Bin Beit El Vina Ai Miyam La'ir. And he puts them as an ambush between Beit El and Ai in the inside of the city. So here's the question. What's this ambush talking about? How many people would you say were in the ambush before?
30,000.
Here he says he took 5,000.
30,000?
30,000. Yeah, 30,000.
Well, some people have to split the 30,000 people. Some of the people have to go in to be the original baiters to get the people out of the city.
Right. Well, it sounded like from the original plan, it sounded like there is one group, the 30,000, that are the ambush. They're going behind the city. And then there's the rest of the army.
When it says 30,000, it says you guys make the ambush.
Right. Right. So what's going on here? So
that's right.
So the book of Source 4, Rashi says they're really... I think I saw, like, I think most of the opinions basically say, I think it was the Radak and the Metudas David, they all say, Vayikach kechamishat alfim ish, oriv acher, oriv achar oriv, one ambush after another ambush, achai karov le'ir mechavira, one closer than the other one. They basically all say that there are two separate ambushes that are going on here. This is the more complicated version. I think usually when you learn this story, like, as a kid, I think you only really hear about the one ambush, but this is the more complicated situation. So this is why I drew you a picture. Okay, so we're going to try to read this long. We're going to read some of the Malbim inside, and we'll look at the picture along with it. Okay, so the Malbim asks the question right in Yilav. He says, Hashelot, ma haya ha'orev hasheni asher sham? What was the second ambush? Hello, Amad Ha'orev Rishon, V'lo Yadanu Mahaya Avodat Hashini. We know there already was a first ambush. What was the point of having a second ambush? He says, Vaykach Chamishat Alafim Ish. Haya Hevdel Gadol, Bein Orev Zeh, Ubein Orev Rishon. There was a big difference between this ambush and the first one. Ki Orev Rishon Amad B'miksoa Dromit Maravit, Rachok Min Ha'ir. So the first one, the 30,000 one, was down here. It was in the southwest. Southwest, right, all the way over here, far away from the city. Agam shelo haya rachuk meod Kimash Katub Al Tarchiku Mo'od, but it wasn't too far away. It was far enough away, but it wasn't too far away. We'll discuss why in a minute. But it was significantly far from the city. Vaya Nechba Mi B'nei Ha'ir, and it was hiding. People and I didn't know about it. Lokein Orev Zeh. Amad Eitzel HaMachaneh Shamda Mitzafon Ha'ir. The second ambush was right next to the rest of the army, and it was very close to the city. Rakshin Nimshach Litzad Maravi. It was a little bit towards the side. So it was a little bit on. It was next to it, but it was on the west side as opposed to being on the north side, as you see in the picture. Ad she'amda machane b'tzad tzafon im ha'orev she'yatza mitzida l'tzad ma'arav k'min dalet hafucha. It's an upside down. It's a backwards dalet. Right. Meaning it goes like this instead of that way.
Right.
Okay, lachin karalu orev zeh pasuk shachrei zeh b'shem ikvo. Right, if you look in the pasukim, it says in pasuk yud bet ve'kach kechamishet alefim ish ve'yisem otam orev bim be'ero ve'am yam le'ir nu gimel ve'yisimu ha'am et kol ha'machaneh asher mitzafon le'ir ve'et akevo miyam le'ir. It's called the akevo. Ha'makev hu ha'misaviv. Right, it's the one that surrounds the enemy. The point was really to surround the enemy on all sides. Okay, right, it wasn't hiding at all. They weren't hiding; they were there. The people and I actually saw them. Okay. I think we can skip the next one.
People and I saw them.
What
did
you say?
So it's not really an ambush.
Well,
the second group.
Right, people and I saw them. So if you look, skip down to six, right? So it says, "V'hu lo yadaki oriv lo me'acharei ha'ir." That's the pasuk. She'agam she'ra'ata oriv she'aya lefnei ha'ir. They saw the ambush that was in front of the city. V'nishmar mipanav, and they were careful about it, meaning they thought that was the tactic. It was like a decoy, right? Like, they see the army there, and they're like, oh, we know, we can see it. We know they have an ambush there. We're going to be really careful about that ambush over there. So they felt like they were prepared. They felt like they knew what was going on because they thought they outsmarted Bnei Yisrael because they saw the ambush. And therefore, they were very careful when they ran away. Sorry, this arrow is the wrong way, but they ran this way. And when they run to chase after Bnei Yisrael, they run this way purposely away from this ambush. But they didn't know that there was like another one waiting to capture them from behind. So he doesn't really go into it. So I was trying to figure out exactly, meaning if they know there's an ambush here, what did they do? Like, meaning they left the city unprotected.
Exactly.
So I feel like they probably, maybe they had people, like maybe they sent like a big group to like, you know, surround them. Or they did something to like
ward off the ambush.
Right, like he doesn't go into to explain what they did, but somehow they knew about it and they were like in control of that situation. And because they were so in control of the situation, they didn't even like bother to think that there might be another one behind them. Mm-hmm. But it's not exactly clear. Okay, then
it's not a walled city. I mean, they don't have to break through
right.
The walls.
Right, yeah, it doesn't say anything about any walls. And then in source 7, just continue with the Malbim. Vayul Yisrael b'tavach, nimsa ata hayu mukapim b'chol arba b'chotam. We didn't actually finish reading the Pesukim inside, I guess we'll go back to it, but basically we'll just finish going through the Malbim's approach. It says basically once they chase after Bnei Israel, and then Bnei Israel, you know, eventually turn around and start chasing them, they end up being cornered in on all four sides. I need to read it and look at the picture at the same time. So basically, right, we had, on the one hand, we have the army on the north side over here. This is a little inconvenient. Umitzad ma'arav can mean gam, okay? And then we have on the east side, right? We have
on the west side.
On the west side. I've had this problem since second grade. I can't. For some reason, I can't get like ma'arav. It's funny. I actually remember like very vividly like the principal coming into the classroom like in second grade and like. You know, the teachers like to show off, and they like call on all the good kids to answer the questions. And she asked me the question, and I got it. So I actually, when I drew this map, I drew everything backwards, and then I'm like, No.
Like a mental block.
I don't know. They have to translate those words. Okay, so what are we saying again? So the okay, what does it
mean by
kamin
gam?
Kamin gam. That's a good question. I don't know.
What does it mean gimel?
Because no, I don't think it's a gimel here. There was actually in the one that we skipped. It was actually the only reason why I put it in was because he said something about being a chet, and then it says b'makor yesh sartut, that like he had written chet, but like it was really a mistake. I mean, it was supposed to be like a, I think a resh. I think he was like, we didn't read it, but he was talking about I think this or whatever. Like, uh-huh. So it's funny, like, because when they hand read it, like, and it's just one letter, it's hard to read. Like, yeah. But here, I'm not sure what the gam actually is. Okay, v'orev b'kenegdam mitzad darum, mitzad mizrach ha'patuach haya neged yiricho. So basically, we had over here, on one side, we have the army. On the other side, we have ambush number two. On the other side, we have ambush number one. And over here, on this side, we have Yericho. And Yericho, he says, is basically, they already own it, right? V'tzad ha'patuach haya neged Yericho shekvar haya tachat memshel Yisrael. Again, he doesn't go into it, but here I would imagine that, I guess, once they took hold of Yericho, they must have stationed some unit of soldiers there as well to keep hold of their city. So they basically blocked in on all sides. So we see Yoshua's great wisdom here that this is one of the basic tactics in war is to surround your enemy on all sides.
So this is Chachmat Yahshua because Hashem just said make an ambush, but
right.
He didn't tell
didn't
him how
didn't
tactically
say how,
to do
right.
It and where and what.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. We'll just finish up the psukim inside so we just get the story down. Where did we leave off? We did Yudbet. Maybe Kakke Chamishet Alefim Ish Beisim Atom Ori Bein Bin El Bin Aim Yam La'ir Veisimu Ha'am Et Kol HaMachaneh Asher Mitzvon La'ir Ve'et HaKivom Miyam La'ir Ve'ilich Yoshua B'Layla Ahu B'toch Ha'inek. So we go Ve'hi Kirot Melech Ha'ay Ve'imaru Ve'yashkimu Ve'yitzu Anshei Ha'ir L'krat Yisrael Mechama. So the king of Ai sees that Bnei Yisrael are approaching them. So what do? They get up to go meet Bnei Israel for war. And they didn't realize there was this ambush behind them. So they pretend that they're like being attacked by them and they run away towards the desert. The whole entire city, all the people gather to chase after them. And they all leave the city. Not even one man stayed behind. They leave the city completely unprotected. They leave the entire city open and they chase after Bnei Israel. So you see here they have this certain confidence level based on the war that happened before. They just think it's a complete repetition of what happened before and they just leave the entire city open. Again, it could be again because of that other ambush, they felt a little bit more confident because they knew the ambush.
And also because the men of hell felt they had an estimation of the enemy's power.
Right, exactly. They knew what they were fighting with, and they knew what was happening, and they felt in control. Vayomer Hashem al Yoshua, Netzebech Kiton Asher Biyadecha El Ha'ai, Ki Biyadcha Et Nena. So Hashem tells Yoshua, pick up your spear and hold it up in your hand, because now I'm going to give Ai into your hand. Vayi Yoshua Bekidon Asher Biyado El Ha'ir. Va'orif Kam Mehiram Em Komo. As soon as they see the spear going up, so the This ambush over here gets up to go chase after them. They capture the city. And they set it on fire. This is like the pasuk of shock, right? So the people turn out, they think they're in control. They're chasing after them. We're going to win again. And all of a sudden, they look behind them. They see smoke, their city going up in smoke. They just didn't know what to do themselves anymore. They couldn't run anywhere. They just see their entire city, their entire families are going up in smoke. And they're like, wait, we thought we were winning. Like, and they're just this complete shock. The nation that had been the runners, the chasees, right? They turned into the chasers. The Yeshua of Yisrael ra'u ki lakad ha'orif at ha'ir. Once they saw that the city was taken over, then they come back and they turn around and they start fighting against Ay.
Sorry, the smoke is a siman?
No, the siman is just the key, they're actually burning the city.
Yes. But weren't they supposed to take the shalal? Weren't they supposed to
So when did they take the shalal? So it comes out later on.
One would think there wouldn't be such a loot if you burn the city down. Not such a military person. Okay. No, I thought maybe it was signal. Saying, oh, we have the city. You could I thought maybe they were signaling them, but they're actually burning it.
I think so.
Much waste and war.
Yeah, that's a good question. Okay. They get stuck in between, and they destroy all of them. Okay, I'll stop here.
I don't like war.
Okay, our mom, the mom just describes the situation of when the people of Ai find out that they're in trouble, right? It says in source 8, "V'lo ya ba'hem yadayim." Tchila ba'it nate Yeshua yado b'chidon amdu haborchim upanu pnehem neged hoyev. Vayoyev nivhal. Right? They're just in just shock. He ra'ah shana yir mecharav ha'machaneh l'fanav. They see they're surrounded. There's smoke in their city, and there's this army in front of them. Vamdu nivhalim mibli yodim ma lasot. They just had no idea what to do. ואחר זמן מה כששאר יהושע כי יוכל להרב לצאת מן העיר להזכיר את האיב בא להפליט ולהפליט וישובו והתחיל להכות את אנשי העיר and then they started to fight against them. Okay. Okay, so here's the question. Right, we just went through the first war, right, in Parak Zion. We had the first war in Ai and they fail. Right, and what was the main reason why they failed? Achan, right? Uh-huh. Because of Achan, right? But we said that Achan was really indicative of a larger picture. It wasn't just Achan, right? It was really a feeling amongst a lot of them. There was a pervasive feeling of they didn't really get the whole Yericho thing, right? Why is it that all the spoils go to Hashem, right? They didn't understand that the war was really, the entire victory came from Hashem, right? And here, right, the goal was in Ai, right, this was going to be a natural war, and we thought, like, in the natural war, it should be that they should win, right, the whole point was that they're going to have Hishtadlus, and they're going to have this Bitachon and Hashem, the two together are going to cause them to win, and it didn't work because Hashem wasn't with them, right, because they had that lacking. But now, we would think that now if we come to the second war, what should happen? What are we trying to prove?
That we can do it also.
We're going to try to prove that, well, yes, but, meaning, if they lost the first time, and now we want to show everybody that, like, it's not just about your own powers, but it's also about Hashem being with you, then really it would make more sense that they should do the war again, and it should be very similar to the first war, right? It should be, they send the same amount of people, the same kind of tactics, they should do the same thing, and this time they'll be victorious because now we know, now Hashem is with us, and if we put in our stylus, it's not going to, that's what we need to do, but we need to have Hashem with us, otherwise it doesn't work. But if now they go out, and all of a sudden there's, like, this brilliant military strategy, right? And how many people did they send to this war?
A lot. 35,000.
Right, at least, because we also don't even know, that's only the ambushes. We don't know who were in the army, right? And in the first war, the spy said to them, you only need 2,000, 3,000 people. So they sent 3,000. So now they're sending more than 10 times the amount of people they sent the first time. And they have this whole strategy. And Yehoshua now becomes this amazing general. Like, before, Yehoshua didn't even go with them in the first war. And now we see Yehoshua goes with them. And not only does he go with them, you saw a couple of times in, first we saw in Tet, by Yelen Yehoshua Balaila Hu B'Tocha Am. He says, Be'emsa Machana Lan Balaila Hu. He made sure to sleep in the middle of the Machana. He was really a very active leader here. Kedelu Zarzam Kulam Lashkim Avoker La Rucha Melchama. He is going to get them excited and wake them up and get them excited to go to war. And then in Pasuk Yud it says, sorry, that was Radak in source 9. In Pasuk Yud it says, so there, Adak says, he's going out there and he's checking to see how the people are doing. Are they ready to go to war? Are they up to it? Like he's really there with the people. He's being this very on top of it general. And finally, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, וילך יהושע בלילה ההוא בתוך העמק. כלומר, הלך הוא ואחרים עמו בתוך העמק שהמחנה שם. He walks through the camp in, that was in the valley. לראות שומרי המחנה, אם הם ערים או ישנים, he wants to see whether the guards of the machane are sleeping or awake. פניצו אנשי האי פתאום עליהם ועקום. In case I would come fight against them. So basically, he's really on top of it. So it's very different than the first battle as well. So we see between the strategy and the amount of people and Yeshua's active role here, it kind of gives us a very, like the message that we almost could take from this is that last time they lost because they weren't prepared properly, but now that they actually are going out there and they're really putting in their shalos, that's why they win, right? Which is not the message that we would expect to get over here. So why is it that dafka they're putting in so much hashtadlus if we're trying to prove to them that they need Hashem to be with them? So if you're looking in in source 10, so he says like this. He says, Tziva la'asot kol ha'achanot v'tachbulot ha'ilu. The reason why he said to do all of these preparations and all of these strategies, la'atot ha'avdei kochavim u'mazalot, was in order to confuse and to confuse the other nations. Leman yichashvu shekol nitzchonam hu ba'avor ropa am v'tachbulot. The point was to make the other nations think that the whole reason why they won was because they had so many people and because they had such good strategies. V'lo yad Hashem astazot, and not because they had Hashem with them. So therefore, what are they going to do? Now they realize that Bnei Israel is fighting in a natural plane, so they're going to gather all together, and they're also going to have a lot of people, and they're going to lamtik eight seven. They're going to come up with their own strategies. Virov Yotzim with a lot of advisors. This is going to be good for Bnei Israel. Why is it good? In the end, all the nations are going to, because they're not scared. Like if they would have thought this was miraculous, then they'd be like, oh, we can't fight against them. Hashem, you know, we can't fight against Hashem. Look what he did to Yericho, look what he did in the Yardim, look what he did here. If it was a miraculous war, then they would have been scared. But because they saw that it was, yeah, they had great strategy, but like, if it's a great strategy, it's just a natural thing. And therefore, if they get all of them together and they find the greatest advisors, they can match it, right? So, and because of that, it was actually good for Bnei Israel because they gathered together and fought them all at one time. Which is what happens later on. Okay, so that's Mitzvah David. I think that we can just take what he said and take it one step further. And I think the idea here is that it is very confusing. But if you have a war like this, this is the kind of war where most people will make the mistake and see like, wow, yay, we're great. Like we did it. We had such a great strategy, and we're so amazing, and it was all us. Or they could say, yeah, we did it because we sent so many people, and it was so obvious. Of course, we were going to win. And this is like the kind of war where it's very easy to forget Hashem's presence. So why do we need that? Because right now, while we're trying to teach this message, it's important to take the extreme case. Like if we would take a regular war, if you would take a war where it was more apparent Hashem's hand, then later on when they would encounter a war which was where Hashem's hand was less apparent, then they might not get the message. They might be like, well, now this was us. Meaning, yes, in the beginning war when we got that message, we understood that. In that case, their Hashem wasn't with us. But here, their Hashem was with us. But here, like when we have a war like this, like this is really just a natural thing. Of course we won. I'm not being clear. I guess the point is that if we can teach that, if we're able to get Bnei Israel to understand it in this war, then they'll understand it in all wars. I mean, this is the most extreme it's going to get. This is the kind of war where
there's no way they should lose.
Right. I mean, it's like so obvious they're going to win that like it's very easy to forget Hashem's hand. So if we can prove to them in this war that it's really because Hashem is with them, then they'll understand it for all wars. Does that make sense? Okay, so how do we see Hashem's hand in this battle? How do Bnei Israel learn that? How do they see that in this war?
Yeshua still lifts his stick.
Good, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I don't know if they know, but the original strategy came from Hashem. I mean, maybe not all the details, but he said, make an ambush of the city.
Good, right? Meaning, there are definitely things here that are not the way things are in our day. Meaning, Hashem told them they're going to win. He told them make an ambush. And then, like the most obvious one is that Hashem tells Yehoshua when to pick up his spear. And that's really the most important part of the strategy. Meaning, the strategy wouldn't work without that. Like, everything was a great strategy, but if they don't have the timing right, then it just can't work. Meaning that, how do they know? Well, how do people in the ambush know when to come out? They can't see when every last person has left the city and they've gone enough of a distance that they're not going to be able to come running back. How are they going to know that?
Can they see a spear kilometers away?
That's
good. Yeah, I actually saw. So yeah, no, I did see. Let me try to think if I can remember. I definitely saw opinions about that. How that worked.
Been a flame.
Maybe the kidon was also on fire.
No, there was somebody said that there was like a flag attached to it, but it's still like, if it's like, it's hard to see that from far, even if it's a flag. I have to remember, because I definitely did see some answers that I don't remember, so I have to try to remember to look what they were. But somehow they were able to see that, so I have to figure that out. But even
maybe
so,
that's
like
part of the miracle
that they were able to see it.
It was a miraculous thing that they actually saw them.
Or maybe somehow
it's hard
they had
to believe
some
that they were. Buried, not buried, but hiding so far south of the city, and the people left north of the city and followed the Israel, so there was a distance from the city. And
Unless there was like some fire attached to it or something. It has to be like something. I don't know. I have to go look at that. But really, that timing came from Hashem. Hashem said, now's the time. If Hashem hadn't said that, then easily the entire thing could have gone wrong. If they came out a little bit. First of all, it says in Pasuk Dalet, right? It says over there. Okay, it says in Pasuk Dalet. Vayitzi with something more. Ve'u atem arim la'ir me'achra'ir. Al tarchiku min ha'ir me'od vayitzen kuchem nechonim. Meaning they have to be far enough away that nobody could see them. But they can't be too far away, because if they're too far away, they're not going to get there in time. They have to be ready to, at the exact right moment, jump into the city and start burning it. If they wait too long, then it's going to be too late. Meaning, at any given moment, anything could happen. Meaning, it could happen that the people will be running, and they'll all of a sudden they'll be like, wait a minute, we just left our entire city. our wives and our children are there unprotected, and then they're coming running back. Or at a certain point, they might... If they're chasing the people and they realize they're not catching up to them and they're not beating, I mean, none of them were killed, then they might give up, right? So there's this the time frame really. If you look at it from with hindsight and you just see, you're like, oh, it was a great strategy, it really works well. But within it, like, it was really a lot of things had to work out together, and there's no way that they could have done that on their own. Now, in this case, it happens to be that there was Hashem saying, okay, pick up your spear now. It's time. In normal cases, we don't have that. And even so, if you look at it with that kind of eye, then you realize, like, things just don't work out by themselves. When you have a complicated plan, anything could go wrong. Again, also over here, like, the people were running away from... The army's running... They're pretending to run away from them. If they come a little bit too close, they'll actually get attacked and killed. But if they go too far away, then they're not going to be able to turn around and run after them. So there were a lot of complicated details there that really only could have been the hand of Hashem, but at the same time, it's very hidden, right? And a military person, historian looks at it, could just say like, oh, that was great strategy. They might not actually see it, but if you're looking for those pieces in the puzzle, like if you look at the details, then you realize it has to be that Hashem was with them. I was just like thinking about it. I had to do it earlier for like a couple months ago for work. I had to like put together like this bat mitzvah mission. Like a family that came, they're a very big Amit family, and they wanted to go to all different schools. They had like in this part of the country and that and that and that, and they were going to like a few schools a day, and they had to have this activity and this transport. Like, there were a lot of details. And I just said to myself, I said, you know, I planned for this for months, but like, there's just so many things that could go wrong that like, it's completely not up to me. Like, when you realize that like, there's so many different factors that have to work together, then you realize, like, it's just, no matter how much you plan and no matter what a good strategy is, it doesn't work unless you also have the combination of Hashem being with you.
It's also not 100%, because there's some man-made effort, but like in the wars of Israel, the ones that were so unlikely for them to win and come out victorious were like so obviously miraculous that they won, and then like with the Second Lebanon War, no one thought that they would get such a crushing defeat and be so embarrassed in front of, like, be shown as so weak, because they were known already as so mighty. And then, like, what should have been something that was very Ki'ilu manageable, became very clear that, like, no, it's not a luck test. It doesn't matter what reputation you have and how mighty people think you are. And I don't know, that's the way I see it. Like, when we go into Gaza and then there's, like, days and days of bombing and shelling, and we come out with one chayal mildly injured, or, like, then it's just like, wake up, people. Like, it's so clear. Like, this, Hashem said this is the way it's going to happen. Like, we should be davening every day that Hashem should protect the chayalim and make us successful in war. It's not like,
It's not
that we will be protected. Yeah, no. But it's Muvan Me'alav that it's from Hashem. Here it's more obvious than like when the U.S. loses troops in Iraq or something. Like, meaning because it's Hashem's army. It's like, it used to be in Tzivos Hashem when we were little kids in America. Hashem's army.
Yeah, so, and even like at the end where... So Yehoshua tells people, I can't find the pasuk. Yehoshua tells people, see if I can find it. Maybe one of you can find it. He tells them, you should get up and you should get up and ambush the city, and Hashem will give it into your hands. I'm not sure where that is, but.
He tells them to ambush.
I think it's later on. Like, I think it's before it actually just before it happens. Okay. Anyway, so we'll find it at some point, but just trust me for a minute. Just go and say it. And you could almost say, like, why do you need to say that Hashem is going to give it in your hands? It's like, we already know. It's like, this is a foregone conclusion. Of course they're going to win. Right? So again, the idea here is that the pasuk is telling us, even after all the strategy, right, if Hashem wouldn't give it into their hands, if Hashem's involvement wasn't there, then they wouldn't succeed. And there's a Gemara in source number 11. It says, So this is what a chassid should daven about. Le'it mitzo. So what does that mean? So Rabbi Yochanan says, Zo kvura. Amar Rava Barba Arshila. Hainu da'amri inshe. Libai inish rachmi. Afilo ad zibula bitraita shlama. Okay. So Rashi explains here, right? You have to daven. He says, you have to daven that they'll be able to find for you a place to be buried when you need to be buried. And then the second opinion says, shalom you have to daven that not only you have a peace while you're alive, but even until the day that you die, until you're buried, you have to daven, because it's not a given. You think, like, at a certain point, like, you don't need Hashem with you every second. Like, you're already dead, right? But, like, even to the last moment, like, if Hashem's not with you, it's not going to work. And it's actually, I was reading this and just thought about, like, I don't know, I should bring it in, but, like, when my father, like, at his funeral, so it actually happened that, like, when they were digging the hole in the grave, like, there was actually, they found water in it, and they couldn't bury him. Like, nothing's a given. Like, you think, like, okay, certain things should just, you know, that's just how it is. It just goes. But, like, every single thing, like, if you don't have Hashem with you, there's no such thing as a given, basically. Okay, now it's interesting, right, when it talks about the sign was this raising of the spear, right, and it says there, not only did he raise it, but it goes on to say, where is it? Can't find any person today. Basically, it says that he continues to hold it. It says,
here. Oh, here, I said that before. chavav lo yishav yado asher
metal idon. Good. Yeah, excellent. Right, so he keeps on, he holds it up, and he holds up the spear all the way until they finish destroying the city.
Yeah.
Right, so what does this remind you of?
Destroying or looting it? The
Hecharim. Yeah, because I told you that it's both.
I keep waiting for the loot.
This is Asher Hecharim, it's Kol Yoshvei Ha'ai, so there it's destroying, they're not looting the people.
Moshe on the home with the Menchemet
and Amalek, right, which we talked about already before in the first class. I'll just bring in the Gemara again that we actually read then, right? It says, right, by Moshe, when they're attacked by Amalek right after they leave Mitzrayim, it says, Vayaka Asher Yerim Moshe Yado Begavar Yisrael. Whenever they would look, whenever Moshe's hands would be up, then they would win. If he put his hands down, then they would lose. And the Gemara asks, "V'chi yadav shemoshe osot mechama or shavurit mechama? What does the hands of Moshe make the war or break the war?" Ela lamar lacha kozman shayu Yisrael mistaklin klapei mala. As long as they were looking up towards Hashem, u'mishabdin et libam lavi em shabashamayim, hayu mitkabrim. Then they would win. V'im lav hayu neflim. And if not, they would lose. And it goes on to say also, Kayetzi v'davar ata omer, asey l'chasraf, v'simo to'al nis, right, the whole story with the nachash nechoshet, when they put the snake on the stick, v'yakol nashuch ra'a ata v'chayu, anybody who had the plague at that time, they looked up and they would live. Right, v'chi nachash mimitu nachash mechiyah, what is it, magical snake, it makes them live or die? El v'zman sh'yisrael mistakum klav emal, v'mishabdin alibam l'abiyim sh'vashmayim, hayu mitrapin. If they remembered Hashem, they looked up to Hashem, then they would be healed. V'im lav, hayu nimukim, and if not, then they wouldn't be. So basically it's the same idea here, even though the Gemara doesn't bring it in, but the same idea again, that Yoshua is lifting up his spear, so on the one hand, yes, that was a sign for them to know it's time to attack, but he leaves it up there so that they keep looking up to it as they're fighting and they're remembering, oh, right, the reason why we're winning is because of Hashem. Right? It's this like reminder that keeps that message in their head the whole time as they're fighting.
Reminds me of the song about the Tchelet Domer LeYam, and Yam Domer LeShamayim, Shamayim LeKisei HaKavod, like...
I know there's a song to that.
it's not originally a song.
It's Rashi. Okay, so now we're back to the second thing. Okay, so we're up to we're up to Kaf Gimel, I think. Okay, the Etzemelech Ai Tavsuchai Veikrivo to Al Yoshua, but they capture the king of Ai and they bring him alive to Yoshua. Vehi Kechlot Yisrael Haruget Kol Yoshvei Ha'Ai B'Sadeh Midbar Asher Radfum Bo. Once they finish killing out all of Ai, and they kill all the people in the city itself. So 12,000 people die.
Next.
Yeah, it's a hard thing for us to read and to really understand, you know, from our perspective. But but apparently this was. I mean, we'll talk about this actually. I think in the next paragraph afterwards, we're going to talk about the options that were actually given to the Canaanites. I mean, they did have choices. There was a possibility of having peace or of leaving the country. Or there were other options. It wasn't like they were forced that they had to be killed. But still, it's hard for us to really relate to. But that's war. Yeshua lo yishiv yadu asher natap et kiton asher erchim et kol yoshvei ha'ai. He keeps it up. Raka behima ushlal ha'ir ahi bazazu lehem Yisrael kedvar Hashem asher tivat Yoshua. But somehow, I'm not sure what order, because again you had the question about the burning, but they do end up taking the spoils and the animals from the city. And again, so why is it here that they're able to take the spoils as opposed to in Yericho?
Maybe also for the other nations, that they should see that it was a regular war and they won the spoils. And
okay, good. Yeah, that's a good answer. Or also just in general, like the way that, even though Hashem's hand was as much in Ai as it was in Yericho, in terms of the actual way that it was won, so Yericho is obviously miraculous, and therefore we said this was Hashem's war. You know, Bnei Israel didn't even pick up a finger, they didn't do anything. And here, they really did put in a lot of efforts, even though obviously they won because Hashem was with them, but because they put in those efforts, so the spoils go to them. And the Malbim actually says this in Source 13. Tavuz lachem ki po lo yeh kibush kulo nisi. Here the conquering was not completely miraculous. Kmo shehayta nefilat chomat Yericho. Shalachin hakdishu ashlal. Therefore, in Yericho, the shlal was made hektish. Raki yeh leidei ha'tachpola melchama. And therefore, but here, because it was through war and through... strategies, so therefore it does go to them. I guess if you want to, you're saying it would be a better message if it actually still went to Hashem.
I'm so stuck on this whole...
I mean, and the truth is that there's really... Like, I'm giving you one approach to the story, and there are other opinions as well. I mean, there's totally other ways you can go with the whole story. But I think that... I mean, we said last time, we said it was really an exception. Like, all the time, the spoils always went to the army themselves. That was, like, one exception where we were trying to make this, like, paradigm more, like, Hashem's doing everything. You should know, like, this is what really happens all the time, but it's covered up later on. But really what happens in war all the time is Hashem, this is Hashem's war, he fights the whole war, and therefore everything, like, we're going to give it to him. But that's not really the way it comes out in real life. And in real life, it doesn't look like that, and also there are lots to take from the spoils. But just in that one, like, paradigmatic war, just to get that message across, that's why they didn't take them as well.
And yet they mucked up. Like, do you know what I mean? I mean, another chance to prove themselves. Because of Achan. I'm just saying.
Right.
I get it.
Okay, so Vayisrof Yehoshua to Ha'ai. Vayisim Tel Olam Shmamada Yom Hazeh. So now Yehoshua finishes up the job. The entire city is burnt out, and he makes it into this memorial. The destruction is a memorial this day, which is very similar to what city? Yericho. Right, Yericho and Ai are the two cities that are really, I mean, every other city, they do use the cities, they build them up again, and they're made into cities, but Yericho and Ai are left as destruction sites. And we said over there that...
Then?
What?
Then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's an Ai now? I mean,
I don't know.
I was, you know what I mean? But I'm saying Yericho was not meant to be built up again. And the idea there was that, we said by Yericho, the idea that this was a memorial, which when they see it, they'll see the wall half sunken in, and they'll remember about the miracles of Hashem, and everyone will remember, like, Hashem is really the one who's winning the wars. And over here, it's almost the same message, but with a different type of war. And here, we had a war that was completely, or seemed completely to be hishtadlus, but again, this is the first war that reminds us that, like, even in this type of war, Hashem is also really with us. And the Barbie now says over here, since we have the combination of two things together here, Hashkacha Elokit v'Guratam, we have both Hashkacha of Hashem and the strength of the people. So therefore, we remember this by leaving the city destroyed. We're going to remember, first of all, what happened the first time when they fought against Ai, the fact that they sinned and Hashem wasn't with them, therefore they didn't win the war. And as soon as they fixed it and Hashem was with them, then they did win. Okay, and then just one last point in terms of this. So there's actually a midrash that says back in Pasuk Yud Gimel, right over there, we had that weird pasuk that said, just as Yeshua walked in the night through the valley. It's not really clear what valley he's walking through. So we actually saw already in the Radak that there was talking about, he explained in the Pshat that he was just walking through the valley where the camp was, and he was making sure that the Shomrim were awake and protecting the people. But Rashi actually says, goes to Midrash, and he says, source 15, Amrur Vasina Shalan Ba'um Kasha Halacha. What was he walking through? What Emek was he walking through? He was walking through the depths of Halacha. Right, the night before the war, what's he doing? He's busy learning Torah. Right? He's not busy strategizing. He's not busy planning the war, although I'm sure he spent a lot of time planning it beforehand. But the night before, what's he doing? He's busy learning Torah. And this is in direct contrast to what happened the night before Yericho. And if you remember, the malach that came, right? And they had like three different ways of explaining the malach, but one of them was that was this midrash that where the malach was rebuking him and saying, what are you doing? Like you're stopping the people from learning Torah. You're so busy planning your tactics for the war tomorrow that you're not learning Torah. So here, he got the message, right? And he is understanding that even though it's important to put in time in planning the war, he has to also keep the balance, and he has to remember that it's just as important to keep up his relationship with Hashem and to make sure that Hashem is going to fight for him. He has to keep up that connection. So we got the message here. Just to finish off the parak.
What was he doing the night before the first?
Before the first eye?
First eye.
Yeah, I didn't say any Gresham about that. Although it seems that he might have gone just straight from Yericho, so I don't know how much time was in between, if there was actually a night before. But,
God doesn't like that those Rashis bother me. It's like a little bit, I mean, obviously it's with Ruach HaKodesh, isn't it? It's like poetic license, like.
But Om Kishathar, I think that, like, the idea is, like, obviously not, obviously there's a pshat, and there's a reason why it says he went through an Amek, and maybe it's what the Radak said, but the fact that you can learn another dimension from it doesn't
Rashi
take away from it.
Rashi usually likes to stick to the thing that's miyashev et hapshat, the easiest. If it's drash, then he'll use drash, but if the pasuk's calling for it, like, right. Yeah, this, it's the night before the war, he went to sleep in the valley, like,
but
there's
why?
No, because,
no, but it is, because it's a weird pasuk. Why would you have to say, and you should walk through the valley? Like, it's just a weird, like, when you read it, it does stand out. You're reading it, and you're just like, it's, okay, so it's in Pasuk Gimel, right? So it says, Vesima amet kola machane sher mitzvon la'ir, if you want to name la'ir, where he's putting the ambush. Vayelech Yoshua b'layla hu b'tocha emek, and he walked through in that night through the valley. Like, to what? To where? What's he doing? There's no explanation. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely
it
calling
for
something, and that's why the Radak, you know, even the Radak's thing's a little bit stretched. Why is he, how is he assuming here that he's going through to make sure that the Shomrim are awake? Like, that's not pshat. Like, I mean, it's as pshat as he can get, but, like, there's not really, you know, in the context, so you don't really understand what he's doing there. Uh-huh. Not that you would necessarily jump to this, but...
Right.
Although probably, I would say that the Midrash also is... the Midrash here is most probably going off of the Midrash that was in Yericho, so you have to understand there where that Midrash got that from. But once you if you already have that context, knowing that, you know, if
so
you already
the
accept there, then the Malach
said,
right,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, so just to finish off, so then the last thing that happens is, okay, Vez Melech Ai... We're in Kaftet. Tala ala eats. Okay, they hang the king on the tree. Ara eats Arab. Kvo Hashem shesivai Yoshua v'yiridu et nechalto mina eats. But once it gets to be nighttime, then they take the king down from the tree. So basically, right, I mean, that sounds kind of gruesome, but that was the standard, right? If you conquer a city, you take the king and you make a. This is the show to say that we, you know, we totally conquered the city. We got his king even, and that's a very public thing. But the difference here is that. As opposed to other nations, which would have just left the body rotting up there, they took it down, right? As soon as it got to midnight time, they take it down. Because again, this is war, and there's a lot of things that happen here that we don't understand, and we think it's like this wasteless war, and why, you know, why is it happening? But at least there's a certain value system here that at least, like, we should try to, as much as we can, like, to have some kind of moral code, to have some kind of ethics that this is a person created in the image of God. We're going to, you know, as much as he's our enemy, we're going to at least not leave him hanging from a tree. Okay, and basically, the last section of this parak is what we already did. Right, this is the story. This is the whole episode at Har Gizim and Har Eval, which we read about when it actually took place chronologically as they crossed over the Yardim. But it's interesting now that we've actually read the context of what's going on here, we can sort of understand a little bit better why we were placed here. Any ideas now that we've read it?
When we read it here.
Right, we did read it here, but we were at that point in Paradali, but chronologically
there.
Right. I mean, there are some. I said there's one opinion that says it actually didn't happen until after the whole 14 years of conquering and dividing land. Uh-huh. And then there was also, I think, the Mav and the Ravanel actually say that it does happen here. But the most, like, the main opinion, like the opinion that's in Chazal and most of the Mepharshim, is that it actually, and what seems to fit with the Pshat based on the command in Devarim that said when you cross over the Yardin, you should do this. And then we had the whole thing with the rocks that just fit that it happened there. So the main opinion is really that it happened then, but it's placed over here. So first of all, if you think about Achan, right? We said one of the main ideas that we saw at this thing when they did the brachos and the kol, that it was all the ones that were chosen were the ones that were sins that are done in private, right? And we talked about the idea that once they cross over the Yardin, now they're responsible for sins of other people, even if they're done in private. So here, Achan is really the prime example of this, right? We just got through having them, you know, losing an entire war because of the sin of a private person. Or a person did sinned in private, and so the message is very clear. So it sort of like follows that we have, or maybe it should be before, but it follows that they should be together, You're saying it should be before if they already they're accepting it at that point.
Yeah.
Right, but I guess if you're saying it actually happened before, but the placement here is just to remind, like, as it's, you're saying it should be with Zion. Yeah, I guess, but maybe you could say that, right? I don't know. I mean, this is just what I'm thinking, but like, so you can argue with it. But I think, well, also like, Parakeet kind of concludes the story of Achan.
Right, because now they're victorious.
Right,
they've
gotten rid of that problem, and now, right. So that's one thing. Also, we said that this ceremony is meant to occur as they enter the land. So this is really the point where they're really entering the land, meaning. When we say enter the land, it's not just the physical entering the land, but it's entering the land with all that comes with it. The whole, you know, living a natural life type of thing. It's really starting to happen now. So maybe you can say, like, on a certain level, this is when they're actually getting it. This is where they're actually starting this real day-to-day life in the regular world with having this balance. So this is their entering the land. And the last thing I thought was also just we said that the whole idea here was that as they're entering the new land, they have to show their ideals. They have to emphasize this is what's important to them. That's why they write the whole Torah on the stones. And the point was that the whole point was that we have to recognize that the whole reason why we're worthy of having Eretz Yisrael and the whole reason why we're going to win all the battles is because we uphold these ideals and we're only here because of the merits of our connection with Hashem and with the Torah. So obviously that also is a very important message that we see in this war. So that,